Trinity, I can't.
Alrighty. Welcome to the Awaken Beauty Podcast. I am Cassandra, your organic beauty, positive mind management, and clinical hypnotherapist. And I want to ask you a question. How many of you have heard of the saying, your focus creates your reality? Well, here's the hard knock truth. Recognize that your identity of who you are right now in your current reality is probably not who you really are if you were living the life of your vision and of your dreams. And because, and or I should say, until we wake up to a self-aware life, and that the very things we've been conditioned to turn to break through so we can achieve our dreams and desires, are blocked by our current habits and silent rules that keep you imprisoned from not only building a life you love, but feeling the peace and fulfillment you have access to right now. I know you know the mind chatter well. I'll be happy once I lose the weight, once I make the six figures, once I find my twin flame. So life becomes a constant pursuit of happiness, also hustling and searching on how to fix yourself. Well, today, my new friend, Mr. Rex Sykes, who truly is my brother from another mother, is here to share the like-minded modern-day demystifying secrets that I powerfully reveal in my Fountain of You Women's Group Coaching Program, and that he, Rex, undeniably lays out in his profound book titled Life on Your Terms, Live the Life You Want. So if you want to grab your magic wand and tap into how you can have, how you've been misled, even lied to, and how to start to erase your old identity, simply trying to keep you safe, then stay tuned in this groundbreaking interview. So let's tap into who Rex is with his brilliance and his background. So after a skydiving accident nearly robbed Rex of his life and caused him to spiral down into negativity for a couple years, Rex locked himself in his apartment for 6 weeks to sort things through and develop the confidence to face the world again, living happily and successfully. During those weeks of deep introspection and meditation, Rex discovered the key for transformation, which he discusses in his book, Life on Your Terms. And Rex is not short of credentials. With 4 decades of experience helping thousands of people transform their minds and their lives as an NLP master hypnotherapist, and his innovations, including his mind design, and he is the founder of IDA Seminars. Rex, I could not agree more with the statement, choose to be around people that inspire and motivate you, which brings me to absolute appreciation to welcome you to the Awaken Beauty Podcast. Welcome, welcome, my friend.
I am so happy. I'm privileged and honored to be here. Thank you for having me. And it's a fabulous opportunity for me to be in your presence and with your viewers' presence. So even though we're remote in terms of, you know, Zoom instead of actually sitting in the same room, the energy is very, very good. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely, my friend. Well, I truly do mean, I feel like you're my brother from another mother. And you and I met on our new addiction, which is a good addiction called Clubhouse. And I am airing into Clubhouse right now. And, you know, it's just been so transformational for me. And with that being said, meeting you. And when I first met you, the words that you were speaking were just so, it felt like they're flowing and emerging out of my own voice. And so you have a message and the credentials to really bring out the truth on true transformation. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about, you know, your journey. You know, I love NLP, I'm a clinical hypnotherapist, but even with all of those credentials, you know, really what hit your core that brought you to the evolution of writing your book? And I'd love to kind of just explore these key components of the book that you can bring our guests into on this short time we have today.
Well, thank you very much. I wrote Life on Your Terms. I'll show it. This is Life on Your Terms, and it is available at Amazon. And the one of the reasons why I wrote it was I have I've published other books, and I published the Ultimate NLP Home Study Program and other products and things like that, and for people. But I've always been reluctant to publish books because typically what happens is people read a book like they read a novel. They don't study it. They don't necessarily absorb it, and they actually use it to look for proof of their own, to validate their own beliefs. So right. People would come into my workshops from all around the world having read stuff or listened to audio programs that I had out, and they would go, oh, I know that story, or I know what he's going to say next. And when they do that, their mind immediately closes down and they miss the other stuff that's coming in. So I, for years, was willing to put out audio programs because it was the next best thing to being in a live room with somebody. I was more reluctant to put out books because you can't read a book about juggling and juggle or ride a bike or drive a car. You know, you can read a book and follow a recipe from it, and you can be a better bike rider or a better juggler reading a book. And yes, if you apply the steps, you know, in juggling, I mean, I learned to juggle from a book, but it was because I sat down with the book and then did what they said. So reluctantly, I published books. I'm now a fan of books in that regard, as long as people apply, you know, knowledge isn't power unless it's applied. And so that's the purpose of it. Life on Your Terms is a journey. I talk about myself just a little bit in the book, both what happened to me when I was younger in my 20s and how I came to a discovery transformation approach that I had not encountered before, and have taught that now for for 40 years. But also the stories of other people and principles and practices that people can use to start taking and claim back their life and live their life on their terms and create the kind of life that they want. And I always say, create your best life ever. And they can do that using the principles, practices, and the material from the book. So I'm very pleased with it.
Yeah. I love it. You know, and you talk a lot about...
I have my girl dogs. I don't know if you can hear them. Somebody's chewing like a bone behind me or a stick or something. And it's making a lot of...
You can't hear him too bad, but Rex and I, before we started the interview, I was telling him I'm on my way to getting a puppy, almost, and it's so worth it. So I love having the dogs included in our informational here. You know, Rex, something that really awakened me as two professionals that really have our hearts and our mission to really transform lives is that, you know, when you start to learn that the very things that you've always turned to for self-transformation or self-help, the reality is that it's a $13 billion industry and climbing. And why is that? You know, it's the same as the diet industry. There's thousands of diets out there, but people still struggle. And it really comes down to really being able to turn inward. And when we can start to go within, find the right mentor with the right message and the right spaciousness for us to come to our own truth and our true nature. You know, it's a lot of jargon until you actually start doing the work. And, you know, manifestation and all this, you know, sparkly and, in, you know, information really can keep us off of our path. So that's something that I feel that you have so captured, and it's something I speak on too. And so I really want to tap into living life haphazardly, right? And how we really truly need to take control of our mind through mind management. So maybe you could tap into a little bit of the principles of, you know, how the mind works and how you've been able to leap this quantum leap into success for people when they can start to understand the very things they turn to are the actual very things that block them from their true identity.
Yeah, you know, not only is the personal development or professional development field a billion-dollar industry, but so is psychology. And if you look at the evolution of the field of psychology, you realize that it's a system set up not unlike our medical system, which is remedial in nature. You know, they're great at fixing bones, but they're not so great at promoting health. That the field of psychology has been one that you get paid for not succeeding. So if you are a psychiatrist or psychologist or a therapist, and your work depends on having the client sit in a chair week after week, you don't want to get rid of them. You want to keep them if money is your main objective. If helping them lead a productive life is, then you need to fire your client at a certain point. You have to say, you know what, you've made the changes. Now go on and go out and get out and live your life. I don't think that people, because we are so conditioned by our culture, understand how this has come about. And it's really come about really strongly in the last 40 years with the way that they have unregulated or deregulated advertising and promotion of certain ideas. And you can't turn on television news right now without having a psychological opinion rendered about something, whether that's coffee being good for you or bad for you or a medical opinion. And truly, we are inundated with more opinion than we actually need. What people ought to be able to do is sort through all the material that's out there. But of course, that takes a legionnaire strength to say, I'm going to vet all the news that comes to me or all the media messages that come to me that we're bombarded with day in and day out. So people have grown up, and I discuss it in the book, and I'll talk about it in just a moment, but people grow up conditioned from 0 to 7 in a hypnotic state from, mostly in the theta range. And the child comes in as a clean slate, and maybe with some genetic baggage, but it comes in as a clean slate. And here's Christine. That's okay, darling. Hi, sweetie. It comes in with this clean slate, and it is then from the second, even in the womb, but from the second it is born, it is inundated with sounds and tones, eventually sights and feelings from everything and everyone around them. And so if the primary caregivers and the friends and the family and the television is playing and the radio and everything are mostly negative messages, or they're afraid, or they're fighting a lot, or they don't know how they're going to make ends meet, the child is absorbing all of this, and it becomes part of the conditioning or the programming of the subconscious mind, which in my opinion is billions of times stronger, more powerful than the conscious mind. So research estimates that at between 95 and literally 99% of everything we do is automatic and habitual. And that 1% of the conscious mind is what allows us to talk and ask questions and direct things. It's kind of like when you drive a car, you learn to drive a car consciously. You had to focus and talk yourself through it and try and manipulate the steering wheel and the brake and the car and everything at one time. But you made a habit of it after a certain time by correctly repeating this process. And then one day it was, it became habit and you drove off and didn't think about the process of driving. Now you drive mostly unconsciously, but you use your conscious mind to direct it. So you say, I want to go to the store, and you drive and you use a modicum of conscious mind to drive safely and to be aware of other cars. But the entire driving process is outside of your awareness. That's why you can talk on the phone. God forbid you text. That's why you can have conversations, listen to music or radio, get lost in thought, and still end up at your destination. And as humans, we've done this all of our lives by navigating our way out of the way of buses and things that, could harm us, because our subconscious mind is designed to keep us alive. It's designed to keep us alive. And so fear is a beautiful thing. It's a gift to us, because the early humans needed fear to run away from things that would kill them, whether that was other humans, other earthy humans, or saber-toothed tigers or bears or whatever it might be. Fear is a gift. Pain is a gift.
Right.
Because if you put your hand on a burner and didn't know it, you just burn your hand off. But because we have nerve sensors, it's like, ow. What's happened for most of us is now we don't, some still live in urban areas or war-torn areas or in impoverished areas where they are, street level threats. There are real predators out there, whether they're animals or humans, and they live in a state of almost chronic stress and chronic adrenaline. And I mean, people burn out that way, quite frankly.
I think it's definitely true. The low grade inflammation and the chronic stress is definitely the epidemic of today, right? And sickness and illness. And I love what you're saying is that, I often say how your identity is just a memorized set of patterns and behaviors and old beliefs and traumas that are just trying to protect you. And I love also what you said about fear, and fear is actually one of the earliest experiences of the human mind and body of intuition. And we often forget that fear is just information, right? And what you were saying between the 0 and 8 years old, you literally did carry in fields of information in the somatic body and the somatic field from seven generations in the past. We've been able to scientifically prove that now. But so what? It's just more information. So we don't come unscathed without going through the human journey, you know, right. And what your book does and what my program does, it brings you to a point of origin that you actually get to sit on the bottom half of that human journey of the oscillating patterns from the pain and identity that was created and conditioned to you of taking back living life on your terms, coming to your point of origin and becoming self-aware to the unconscious incompetence, to the conscious competence, where we start to integrate living life on our terms by being able to start thinking differently and to start thinking about our thinking.
Absolutely.
So I love where you've taken this in how our environment, the rumination, all of those are just patterns. Right. So it can be for a lot of people, it can be very enraging when they come to this point, but it's the most freeing thing you'll ever realize is that, wow, if I'm just full of conditioned patterns, the next piece I want to take it to in what you really eloquently create a visual of is it's kind of like walking up to a cliff. And if you look down, the goal is maybe the vision. The vision of your next business is the vision. And it's so far down and it's so far away, can feel so viscerally unaccomplishable in the body and the mind that it really truly does come back to asking yourself the right questions and taking one baby step at a time. And I find that so many of us in the manifestation and the quantum science, it's a very opposite. It does take not necessarily massive action, but it takes action.
Right? Oh yeah, no doubt. I mean, action is part of it. I mean, even if you imagine running in a race in your mind, there's action in your mind. You don't just, you know, I mean, everything is made up of action. We are energy and frequency moving and expanding in the universe. So there's a decaying body is action. There's something that's happening, even though it doesn't appear. They think now that even rocks and hard their buildings are, you know, they're vibrating. It's atomic energy, essentially. So there's action within what appears to be solid to us, or that we experience as solid. My goal has been to simplify things. There's so many myths and so much misinformation.
Yeah.
And people have made personal change and development manifestation so difficult. It's all very, very easy. And with the book and with my programs, the thing is that what I try and get people to understand is, if you understand a basic principle, like if you always do what you always did, you always get what you always got. It's a very trite saying, but there's such profundity. It's so profound when you understand that if you continue to do what you've done, you're going to only get the same results. In order to get new results, you have to do something new. Anything different will give you a different result. But people don't understand it. So they approach personal change the same way they approach everything in their life from their conditioning, from those habits that they grew up with. And if they think I'm not good enough, then they approach personal change from I'm not good enough. If they approach or are manifesting with I'm not good enough, or I'll never amount to anything, or I don't know how to make this happen. So what I try and do is I try and say, look, it's really very simple. And then there's this industry out there that's saying, well, you know, you don't know the right steps, or you don't have the right secrets, or here's the 50 ways to do. You don't want 50 ways to do something. If you can't do three or four things, you're never going to do 50 of them. If you can't get past the first chapter of a book, which most people never do, you're never going to read 100 chapters of a book. So you need to keep it simple. And what I discovered when I locked myself in the room was I tried affirmations. I was doing hypnosis. I'd been on a journey since I was 3 years old. And at the age of six, I wanted to be a mystic or a priest. Aristotle said, by the way, and I'm sure you know this, but he said, show me a child at 7 years old and I'll show you the adult, because the conditioning is set.
Exactly.
And so we live from that conditioning, and we have this little conscious mind that can direct it. And that's the cool part about it, is because the unconscious mind is so infinitely much stronger and more powerful than the unconscious, than the conscious mind. It's like the tiny rudder on a big, you know, ocean vessel. Mm-hmm. That little rudder can steer the boat, but the boat's power is the subconscious. In other words, it is what's moving the boat, but the conscious mind is what's steering the boat. So we can only change in one of two ways, really. One is through tragedy or adversity or resistance, where we are up against something and it seems hopeless. And so many people, what happens, and that's what happened to me when I was around 25 years old, is my life fell apart. And in order for me to pull it back together, I locked myself in a room eventually and started to affirm, and I used hypnosis and I relaxed. And the more I tried, the more I got frustrated. I kept saying, I am good enough. And then a part of my brain would go, no, you're not. Mm-hmm. And I go, I can do anything. And they go, no, you can't. You know. And so I started to teach. I wrote an article way back when and then republished it later in the 90s, but why affirmations don't work and why you need to ask questions. Because I would say, I also had lost a girlfriend at the time. I screwed up my career. I lost most of my friends through this thing. And now I see now, but I mean, many years later, I saw it as a gift, because it truly is a gift, just like fear or anything. Scrooge got a gift, right? He got visited by three ghosts and transformed overnight from being Scrooge to being this generous, hey, Merry Christmas, everybody, and tossing out gold. And so we can transform instantly, or we transform through tragedy. And what tragedy does is it just breaks all the programming. It just doesn't leave us with much. And then we kind of have to rebuild. And if you're really wise and you can understand it while you're going through it, which many people don't, is that it's an opportunity at that moment to begin to put things back together. So I'm sitting in my room and I'm doing all this stuff and I'm going, how long is this going to take? You know, why am I so screwed up here? And I realized I was asking these wrong questions. I didn't want to know why I was screwed up. I wanted to know how I could be better. I didn't want to know how long it would take. I wanted to know how soon I could get out of the chair and go back and face my life. So I realized that what we ask ourselves is really, truly important. Now, I didn't invent questions, but I created something called directed questions, because questions direct the mind. If I say, where did you get the flowers behind you? You probably know the answer. Mm-hmm. Or you say it was a gift, or I don't know, somebody gave it to me, or someone brought it in, or whatever. But you have an answer for it. If I say, what's the capital of California, you can say Sacramento is the capital of California, because you know it. What you want to do is ask a question you don't know the answer to, like, how much fun can I have today? You don't know the answer. And what you're using there is what's called transderivational search, which is a fancy name for your brain looks for things when you're not paying attention to it, like the tip of the tongue phenomenon, where you go, what is that person's name? Oh my gosh, where are my keys? Where are my keys? And you look and you look and you can't find them. So you give up. Oh, my keys, you know, or Bob. Bob was the name of that guy. The brain works on it long after you consciously quit. So if you understand this process and you say, in how many different ways am I really wonderful, then your brain will go, oh. But most people use it to say, how come I'm so stupid? How come nothing works out for me? Why am I such a putz? How come I'll never make any money? What's wrong with me? So we're already doing it.
Yeah, the automatic mindset.
Yeah, and I'm trying to teach people just do the opposite of it. Shift it from why am I broken to how come I'm so talented? And if you say, how come I'm so talented? And you go, I don't like that. You can say, well, I'm in the process of learning to be talented. How quickly can I discover that there are things about me that, while maybe not perfect, they're better than I thought they were? You know, because you can inch your way to being, I am outstanding. And life is grand, you know, but if you don't feel it up front, you know, you just inch your way. So you can make transformation really fun and enjoyable and delightful. And a lot of people said, you know, no pain, no gain, and you have to take massive action. Well, you don't have to take massive action, except once in a while. If my car is stuck in the mud, I may need to take massive action to get it from the mud with a push. But once it's rolling, I don't have to continue massive action, because the momentum will take care of itself. I only have to guide the car at that point with a minimal amount of effort. If it, you know, so yes, there
yeah,
are
there's, times. There's power in inertia, right? That's also the law of physics is,
exactly.
You know, you got to create a catalyst, and with no catalyst, you can't keep it in motion.
Right.
And, you know, there's some parts where it is true, as long as you have the visualization, and then you know, there's a point where you have to know very, very clearly on who you want to be, where you want to go, what that is visually, all, NLP, right, through all sensory systems. But then the magic is between the creation, between that endpoint. And I agree with you, this massive action piece is because that's the very thing that puts the system, the nervous system, on high alarm, right? And or we fall into burnout. Massive action is actually not the way. It is actually inspired action, so informed by being in love with the person or the thing that you want to do just because you love it. Because if you're trying to run from pain or a problem, I can guarantee you will fall flank on the floor at some point in time sooner than later. And I also love how you create the question. You know, there's all different modalities, and that's what I love, is it can be playful. I do a thought ladder, you know, for women that really want this amazing body. Well, if you feel overweight and you hate your stomach, you're not going to say, oh, I have an amazing six packs of abs and blah, 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 because to your point, the subconscious knows, and it's going to prove to you that you do not just look down. But if you can look down at your stomach and say, you know, I'm a size 14 and I have a normal size body. My stomach looks a lot like everybody else's. You fall into that neutral zone, or then you can start to kind of work with, okay, what are the steps that I can start taking towards that audacious body that I so want and visualize? Right? So the affirmation, not with an I, not an affirmation, because that is not positive psychology.
I know what you're talking about, because
Well, I'm just saying positive psychology and positivity porn is actually now starting to be, and I'm so thankful, very aware for individuals on that self-discovery, that it is the very thing that will keep you stuck. So I just love your point on the affirmations, because you're directing the subconscious mind to find that for you, whether in the moment or at the long term, because now it has reinformed information to search for.
Right. I don't use the term affirmation because that was somebody's work that came along in the later 90s, and I developed my thing in 1980,
right. 81. Right. You predated.
There's an article out there that I discovered that somebody says, well, Sykes did this and it didn't get a lot of attention, and these other guys did this later on. And it's all good. I mean, it's all good. But if you read his book, you'll see the very examples I've been using for many, many years.
Right.
And that is simply this, you know. Most people will ask questions like, why am I screwed up? And what happens is the brain works by association. Come here, honey. The brain works by association. And come here, honey. Come here. Yeah, I know. What that means is, once you pose the question, it looks for categories like a cluster of grapes. It finds all sorts of different things. So it's not like, you know, it's that one thing that you did, but there's this example and that example and that example and that example. And the more examples you get of why you suck, the worse you feel, because it's creating more bad feelings. But the same thing will happen is if you say, in how many ways am I incredible? What I loved about what you said, and it's truly important, and when I created the attitude activator, which puts into work my direct questions and some other principles, it's like I say to people, you know, you can remember stop, drop, and roll, right? That's what you're supposed to do when you come out of a building. Well, my thing was stop, breathe, and shift back in the early 80s, because what you needed to do is, like your car, if you drove a standard transmission, but even if you have an automatic transmission, it always goes through neutral in order to go into a different gear. So if you're moving forward and you want to go park, you have to go, you know, back through neutral into park, or forward to neutral into park, or back through neutral into reverse. So there's always a moment in which the car is changing from one direction to the other direction. Is why I say a stop sign is a gift, because it tells you don't have to keep traveling in the same direction. You can stop and then choose whatever direction you want to go in.
I love that so much. Let me just repeat that. And I'm going to memorize this.
Sure.
Stop, drop, and roll. To stop, breathe, and shift. Because it always goes into neutral to go into a different gear when you are the driving force of your life. That is, like, I'm going to use that.
Well, the point is because we're conditioned, and I haven't even gotten to the second part of conditioning, but the attitude activator is, attitude is the number one predictor of success in nearly everything, and especially in healing and wellness and health. The attitude toward the treatment determines how well the patient typically does. And Travis Air Force Base conducted research in that years ago, and it's been, you know, continued ever since. Work in the placebo effect is amazing. I was criticized by somebody once because they said, my job is making the placebo effect conscious. In other words, what we're trying to do is consciously use the placebo effect, because it always works. Every pill that anybody, every treatment anyone ever takes, there's always a placebo component to it. It's not added to it. It's not You know, it's just, it's always present. You can't, I can't take a vitamin without the placebo effect happening. Mm-hmm. Because or the nocebo effect, which says if you believe it's not going to work, it probably won't work.
Right.
In other words, which is based on did you know the story of Mr. Right?
Yes.
Very famous story about how he went back and forth. Yeah. So anyway, with the attitude activator, what I did was I wanted to create a template where you could run anything through it. A lot of people have multiple tapes or audio programs, and I wanted to do one that was a template, because what I wanted people to do was learn the process, not rely on the audio program. I'm not a good businessman in that way, because I could have put out hundreds of tapes, but I only wanted to put out one. I'm also lazy in that regard. But I wanted to give people a template that they could use for hundreds of different ways. And in order to do that, I created the process of stop, breathe, and shift. And then what you need to do is, since the patterns are running automatically and reliably, because that's what they do when they're triggered. So, and by the way, emotionally, we always do the same thing the same way. And people don't really understand that. We get mad the same way. We get happy the same way. We get sad the same way. Our neurology has learned the routes, the neural pathways for these different, what we call emotions. They're all processes, but you know, somebody gets angry, they say, you know, I started to flush, my face, you know, flushed, and I saw red, and then I just lost it, and they start getting like their body, and I feel it in my back, and they hear in me. All of that is a sequence that actually happens. It's either sequential or simultaneous that occurs neurophysiologically at one time. So whether you're horny, happy, sad, inquisitive, fascinated, fun, playful, we do it the same way.
Yep.
So different things trigger us, and there are varying degrees of mild annoyance to outright rage. But if you doubt that, just drive along the freeway and then have someone give you the finger, and it's likely that you go right back, you know, because you've been triggered. It's how you always will, and until you get free of it. Yeah. So my point was that you have to interrupt the pattern in order to get free of the pattern. You can't keep perpetuating it. If you always do what you always did, you always give what you always got. So if you keep talking about your pain and your suffering and your problems, or why you were broken when you were 11, or how you overcame, you were a survivor of something. If you constantly talk about it to yourself or other people, you constantly perpetuate it. You keep it alive. And if you want to do something different, you're going to have to change that. If you want to live differently, if you want to live victoriously, you can't keep recounting how things didn't work for you in the past. You have to start recounting how things are working for you now and how they will in the future.
Yeah.
So you actually have to interrupt,
Exactly. Stop perpetuating what you don't want and start shifting to what you do want.
And so you interrupt the pattern and shift into neutral, and you breathe and you breathe and you let go and you breathe. And that puts you in that neutral place where you then change direction, and you can shift into, gee, I wonder how many ways I truly am marvelous. Or, you know, you take those baby steps to it. So you go from, it's like not this, but this, not this, but this, not this, but this, you know, and in between is that break state. So people can change easily. That's why I created the attitude activator. By the way, it's on my website. Yes, you can get it. I've done the heavy lifting for you. So if you want the process, the template, the cool part about it was the way it took me a year to design it was I wanted a template that people would learn the process by going through the process, so that the audio program would do away with itself. Mm-hmm. Certainly you could listen to it. I've had people listen to it for many, many years, and they keep buying it over and over again, but they learn the process so that it becomes part of what they do when in real time they need to go from being less resourceful to resourceful, or they walk in and their boss says something and immediately they feel criticized. Well, instead of responding or walking out of the office or doing what they would normally do, they now can find themselves becoming resourceful and understanding maybe that's feedback that they need to do, or maybe the boss is having a bad day, or maybe they understand that, you know, they are a person of worth, and no matter what this person says, so they have different choices available to them than they would otherwise have had responding in the same old way. And so that brings me, and then I'm going to stop and let you talk, but that brings me to the second point of change, and that is to do the correct behavior repeatedly, consistently, long enough until it becomes a habit. So if you want to learn to juggle, you have to juggle every day or whatever until it becomes a habit. And know that part of juggling is dropping balls. So if you don't like dropping balls, you're probably not going to juggle. But if you go, you know what, dropping balls is part of it. And no matter how good of a juggler you get to be, you still may drop a ball, but there will come a time where you start with two and then three, and then maybe you do four and then maybe five, you know, and you build up your skills and your abilities because you consistently. Arnold Schwarzenegger didn't get his body overnight. He did it through constant exercise. And, you know, no, there's not an Olympic champion out there who was born an Olympic champion. They had to acquire. I mean, they may have had, some people have more physical prowess than others, perhaps, but they had to train themselves and they used mentors and coaches to become the very best. And when you think about an Olympic champion, they compete every 4 years for a few seconds. And they spend the rest of their time training for those 4 years for those few seconds. I mean, what an incredible life to live. I have a friend who was in the Olympics twice, and then he was paralyzed. And he used his training and his, I write about him in my book, Jamie Nieto. He used his mental training and conditioning and his faith and his certainty to walk again and to walk his bride down the aisle when they gave him very little chance of ever walking again.
Wow.
He was quadriplegic. He could move his left pectoral muscle after the accident. And he's now up and walking. He's a writer. He's an actor. And he's on a TV series and things like that. And there are so many countless people who have gone through so much and can do it. You and I and anyone can do it. And that's the message that you and I bring to the people is that, you know, if it's possible for one person, it's possible for anybody. You just have to create that neutral space where you can say, okay, I'm going to give this a try and then try it on like a new pair of shoes, you know, and walk in them until it becomes comfortable. Mm-hmm. In my book, and I promise I will stop. I talk about, I learned this from experience. There are people who they call it peacocking, you know, when guys wear flamboyant hats and women, you know, it's peacocking. It's, you know, it's drawing attention. Because I was never very comfortable with that. And so I wrote about it because I hated Hawaiian clothes. I wore like in the 60s and 70s, I wore the clothes of the time. And then the 80s came along and it was the disco era. And I went to work for a woman who said, if you're going to work here in this house, you're going to wear drawstring pants and Hawaiian shirts. And to me, that was like the worst thing ever. I could wear tight blue jeans and designer shirts, but I couldn't wear drawstring and Hawaiian shirts and flip-flops and the whole thing. It was too casual and too, but wearing it around the house, I got where I would wear it to flea market. I'd wear it everywhere. Now you can't get me out of it. So if I dressed any one of the readers or listeners up in, say, Elvis Presley's sequined white outfit and said, this is what you're going to wear from now on, at first, many of them would be uncomfortable. After a while, that would be their standard dress. They would be completely comfortable with it. And that's the cool part about our brain, is the brain learns how to make things comfortable. It's also the reason why we get stuck too, because we don't want to get out of our comfort zone. So what's a blessing may also work against us, and you just need to learn how to direct it. So I want to give you a chance to speak because I've been going on for a while.
I just love it. I could listen to you for hours. I mean, truly, I mean, and it really is, you know, one thing I wanted to pull out there was, you know, we often hear purpose and we often hear passion when we talk about our big vision and our dream, but truly, truly, as watered down as it is, it really does go back into the ability and tenacity to move into neutral. Whether neutral means finding and feeling the feelings that you haven't felt so that you can flush them through and actually overcome those moments of anxiety or what have you. You know, it's that neutrality that is your guide to then overcoming and moving into that new direction. And so I think so often we try to shift gears, right, from one to the other. And those are the very things, again, that keep us stuck. And so the other piece was the precedence around perseverance and also going back to passion and your purpose, right? The individual that you shared about that story, early on in his life, he had the discipline to go after his purpose and his passion, in which is reapplied to anything and everything in our life and the power of identity. Now, a lot of people will say, create your altruism identity of like a Oprah or somebody like that. I'm sorry, but I don't want to be Oprah. I want to be me. And so creating a new identity is getting really, really clear on all the fine-tuned specificities, and then bringing the principle and the presence and the emotion and all of these pieces together to just making all of those small steps, right? I love the piece that you shared about putting on a new pair of shoes. So I'm going to re-reference that too. Go find the sexiest pair of stilettos, try them on, and then walk those babies. Until they're worn in and you're standing on stage with your power and presence, with your motivation and your message to change the world. And that's really what it is, right? It's owning our presence so that we are authentically and truly who we are and who we choose to be. And then if you don't want to be that, you can go change your identity at any point in time. But it does take time. It does take right mentorship. It does take breaking free of old patterns and beliefs through self-awareness, through the questions that you have so brilliantly created with your program, and then just staying with that because you love it. And if you don't love it, you're going to lose your passion. So Rex, I love it all. And we have a short time here together because I know you have to hop on to another meeting. But, you know, as far as, you know, that program that you've created, and I know it's inside the principles of your book, what are three steps that someone can take, just because it's so visceral right now? What are three simple steps that you can conclude from your program that people could start doing today?
Well, that's a great question, because there's so many, you know, what I just said, actually stop. Breathe and shift.
Maybe it's just that. Stop.
A big one. I mean, that would be a big one. The other thing is to take to heart what I said earlier. If you always do what you always did, you're always going to get what you always got. Exactly. Understand that in order to change your life, you have to change some things in your life. And people compartmentalize. They go, if I want to be the best basketball player in the world, I need to do this. Or if I want to be the best seamstress in the world, I need to do this. If I want to be the best singer in the world, I have to do that. If I want to be the best cook, I have to do that. You know, so they're used to applying it toward a talent or an avocation, but we have been conditioned out of applying it to our own personal development, our own ability to direct our minds, because it is of great benefit to the powers that be, and you can decide whoever those are, to not have people live their dreams and their passions and their life. I lived in a commune that essentially was destroyed by the government because they couldn't see affluent people living together in the desert. As part of, you know, leaving society, it just was, this is not an example we want people to do. So let's get rid of them. I wrote Life on Your Terms because I want people to be able to claim back their life. That doesn't mean they have to quit their job. They could, but that doesn't mean that they have to. What it means is that they live life on their terms, means that they feel whole and complete inside themselves. They find what their purpose is here on the planet. I believe that we have an authentic self. We come in as this clean slate. We get conditioned like with layers, like an onion, you know, and this little child. And then we grow up pretty much validating those, and our experiences validate that. So if we feel worthless as a child and something happens when we're 25, we go, see, I'm no good. And we do that until we go to the grave.
Right.
We don't have to. The key is we don't have to, but we're taught that there's no other thing to do, that we, you know, we work 9 to 5, we retire, you know, we get a pension or whatever, and that's not true anymore. But, you know, we have these things that we were supposed to believe, or that you're not good enough. Henry Ford allegedly told Napoleon Hill, don't put that book out because I'll never get anybody to work my assembly lines if they're all entrepreneurial and all living their own lives. So there's an argument that the books were changed, that they were watered down, and so that there was enough in there that if people could see through it, they could get it, but some of it was hidden. And well, the point is that everybody around us is telling us what to do, from ancient mystics to Jim Carrey and Oprah. They're all telling you their process. Most of them are saying, like Will Smith said, I was a big star before you ever realized it. In my head, they had a purpose, they had a passion. If you listen to people on night TV talk shows, they will say, I lived out of my car, I was broke, I lived on the street in a tent with my dog and my mom, you know, for years and years. But I always knew that one day I was gonna break through. I knew that one day somebody would hear me sing. Listen to Lady Gaga talk about her success. Listen to Jim Carrey about what he did from Mulholland Drive, looking down on the valley going, you're gonna work with me and you're gonna pay me $20 million to do so, you know. It is discovering that. My favorite one of my favorite people in the world is Edwin C. Barnes in Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich in chapter one, when it introduces him, and it continues, but it says, Edwin C. Barnes started as a hope and a wish. He wanted to work with Thomas Edison. He wanted to be partners with Thomas Edison. And so he, one day after a while, his wish became a desire, his wish became passionate desire. He hopped the freight train, dressed pretty much as a hobo, got to Thomas Edison, and Edison said, I see this guy standing in front of me looking like a bum, but there was something in his eyes. There was a presence, there was something there. And Barnes, who later retired very wealthy in Florida, said, I came to put you on notice, I'm going to be your partner. Whether he said it out loud or said it in his head, he was, I'm going to be a partner of Thomas Edison. Edison said there was something about him, so I gave him a job as a janitor in my company. He cleaned up. And for 5 years, there was no visible outer signs of success. His circumstances, the oak in the side of the acorn was not visible. You didn't see the oak tree at all. Everything that could go wrong would go wrong. Everything that was right. He just lived in his head that one day he was a partner of Edison. And Hill writes that every day he continued to make this a burning white hot obsession, knowing that one day he would be a partner. And then somewhere 5 years later, they had developed a dictaphone that the salespeople couldn't move. And Barnes said, I'll do it. I'll sell it. I'll show you what I can do. Edison gave him a chance. He did sell it. Edison made him a partner, and he died a very wealthy man. But he kept his purpose and his passion alive inside persistently, even when there was no evidence of it. And sadly, here's what our culture does. And I call it the baseball phenomenon. Three strikes and you're out. If you don't succeed, try. And then what? You try. First you don't succeed, you try and try again. Or try again. And then what do? You give up.
Yep.
And that's conditioned to us. We have instant on TV. We have instant microwave food. We have all this kind of fast stuff. If it's not working, take a pill. We're conditioned to not persist. We're conditioned to not commit and follow through. And so that's why I wrote Life on Your Terms, because if you want to have a success, you need to do what Barnes did. You need to have a hope and a dream that becomes a passion and it becomes a purpose, and you need to then commit to it. You don't have to take massive action. He worked every day as a janitor doing menial work, but he kept it alive in his head. So and Emerson said something to the effect of, imagination and the five senses can never be reconciled, because when you look at the world, you're seeing the world, but you can't let the world dictate who you are. You have to live from within, from your purpose. You have to live from the imagination. And that's why I do what I do and why you do what you do. That's why you have your programs. I have Mind Design and Life on Your Terms and the Attitude Activator, my other programs, because it's about helping people see that they can accomplish their dreams and live the life that they want to live and be fabulously happy and fabulously wealthy and fabulously healthy if they just apply the simple principles. And you can't do it by doing the same old stuff constantly. You have to do the new stuff that's gonna get you to where you wanna go. In other words, if I wanna go to New York and I'm in Chicago, I have to drive the way to New York. I can't drive to California, or I can't drive looking back at California. I have to look at New York and then drive and head there. And then little bit by little bit, I get there as long as I don't stop along the way. And there may be roads, you know, bridges washed out and detours and everything else that are obstacles. But as long as I keep going, I'll get to New York City. And this is what people need to understand with their dreams. You can't try once or twice or three times. And what most people say is, I've tried everything. And you go, did you try this? They go, well, no. And what about this? And they go, no. And you get, what about that? And they go, no. So we are really good at BSing ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's part of our conditioning. But if you align with your subconscious mind and you put it to work for you and you train it and condition it like Schwarzenegger conditioned his body or like Barnes conditioned his mind, you can do phenomenal things and incredible things. And I know you've witnessed it and you've helped people do that. And I do too. And I hope that everybody who's watching today will use this, if they haven't already, as a starting place to start making their dreams come true and live life on their terms.
I love it so much, Rex. And last question for you. One thing I always ask my guests before we go, what is one thing that you have personally at a soul level awakened to as of late?
What have I awakened to as of late? That I'm a walking miracle, that I am my authentic self, that I am source, that I am the creator of the universe. When I was 25, I went, wow, you know, I actually own this planet. And I own Los Angeles, by the way, and all my LA friends get really mad when I say that, because they're like, well, what makes you think? I go, no, I have lots of co-owners, but I own it, meaning this is my power place. This planet is mine. I own the planet. Means I have some care that I need to give to the planet, but I also ought to act like I own it. It doesn't mean I walk through people's yards or I go in their living rooms and sit down because I own the planet. It means that I belong here for as long as I belong here. You know, I own my house. You know, if somebody came and said, get out of your house, you don't belong here. I go, no, I do, I own it. You know, so I own the planet. I own who I am. All the problems, all the difficulties, all the good needs, all the stuff, I am who I am, and I am an unfolding that continuously unfolds through time. And one day I'll transition out of this body and I'll continue and unfold whether I realize it or not, because consciousness and energy can't be created or destroyed. It just is transformed. So true.
Well, Rex, thank you so much for your time today on the Awaken Beauty podcast. It truly has been an honor. You know, I'm sure we will see each other in other streams, whether in Clubhouse or what have you, but I definitely am going to put all the show notes for your book and your websites so that every individual can go ahead and head on over there to purchase your book, Life on Your Terms, Create the Life You Want, with Rex Sykes. And Rex, thank you so much.
Yeah, may I add one thing? I hate to do that while you're closing. I really apologize. But my website is my name, rexsykes.com. And there is a free gift if people want to go and claim it. And it is a 22-minute audio on your biggest problem and what to do about it.
Awesome.
So rexsykes.com. The book they can get from Amazon. But while they're at my website, they can subscribe to a newsletter, or they can look over my programs and products and things like that and find one that speaks to them or their heart and go from there. So I really appreciate you doing that. And I apologize for stepping in at closing here.
No, that's wonderful. You know, resources is what we want, right?
And then we're in Clubhouse, so they should look at profiles too, right? And get on Instagram and Twitter and all that kind of stuff. So that's very cool. Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. So awesome. Well, I will go ahead and I will put a polish on this interview. We were live in Facebook. So hello, everyone in Facebook.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I appreciate you so much, my friend. Can't wait to get to spend more time with my brother from another mother.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
No, really enjoyed this. Thank you so much for the opportunity, and you rock. You do such great work and such great service, and I see you in other rooms, and I listen, and I learn, and I love it. Thank you.
Sweetheart, and likewise. So for all of you joining us today, told you you're in for some brilliance and that you absolutely have full control of your life, and you can stop, breathe, and shift with Rex Sykes. So with that said, thank you so much for listening to the Awaken Beauty podcast today. And until next time, stay sane, get sleep, and bring your sexy back. Thanks so much.